the father who owned the vehicle probably had no idea that the girlfriend was operating it. Didn't really matter because he had an obligation to know. Hello and welcome to the next episode of Beneath the Law. My name is Gavin Tye. I'm here with my colleague and good friend, Stephen Teal. Today we're going to talk about a case that came out really underlining a very serious issue. And, you know, everyone knows, sadly, that automobile accidents are prolific. Tragically, many people get injured in automobile accidents. And there's a very highly developed law. Certainly, there's literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of automobile accident cases out there where the law is very, very well developed in that regard. And in addition to that, the requirements for drivers to be insured is highly, highly developed. And there's a reason for that, unfortunately, because the sad truth is that accidents and injuries cause enormous economic losses and cost an enormous amount of money to not only compensate the victim, but when we talk about compensating the victim, we talk about things like future care costs, which is the sense that if somebody's injured, sadly, there's an expense associated with their care in the future. And that is oftentimes in personal injury cases. And a huge part of the damage award is what is it going to cost to look after this person into the future? There's also loss of employment income in the sense that that person may not be able to work further and that therefore you have to have some source of income to carry them through for the rest of their lives. Now, when we get into we see lots of other vehicles that are out there on the highways and the byways. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, as in the city right now, I know there's just a explosion, for example, in these electric bikes that are all over the place. And from what I can tell, you don't need a license. You don't need an insurance policy to have one. But you know that there are going to be injuries with respect to those bikes. You know that people are going to get hurt. So there are lots of other vehicles. There are snowmobiles, for example, here in Canada. There are ATVs, which are all-terrain sort of buggies. They come in all shapes and sizes. People ride them around on all sorts of, back roads and rural properties and stuff like that. And people do get hurt, very seriously hurt. So a case we're going to talk about today is out of the Ontario Court of Appeal, and it dealt with an ATV accident, and it led to a very serious injury on the part of the rider of that. And the question becomes, what do you do? Whose fault is it? I mean, the rider were operating the vehicle, you know, what rules should be in place? Who at the end of the day is going to be responsible for that rider's or that passenger or that driver's injuries? So Stephen, maybe you could tell our listeners a bit about the facts of this particular case.
Yeah, I'll do that. I just want to back up with respect to your comments about cars. You know, we have insurance. But most owners may not necessarily think about insuring an all-terrain vehicle or a snowmobile or a jet ski. And this case really is educational to owners of these recreational vehicles that they really should be examining insurance and significant insurance because recreational vehicles can result in accidents by users and serious accidents. So the case that we're discussing today is DeRoche versus McInnes, which, as you mentioned, Gavin, came out of the Ontario Court of Appeal. And what the background of that case was, it involved a young woman who was riding her boyfriend's ATV. It wasn't her boyfriend's ATV. It was actually owned by the boyfriend's father. And that's really why this case is meaty from a liability perspective. The boyfriend had basically had her at the farmhouse, the farm property in rural Ontario. They drove the ATV down. The boyfriend was driving to collect a family truck that was parked at the edge of the roadway of the farm property, rode the ATV across the field, and then collected the truck. But of course, somebody had to drive the ATV back to the farmhouse while the boyfriend was driving the truck back to the farmhouse. And so he had the his girlfriend ride the ATV back to his parents' farm. The girlfriend, a young woman, did not have very much instructions on how to ride an ATV. The only instruction that she had was fairly minimal, and it was always under the supervision of the boyfriend or the boyfriend's mother, and always at slow speed. I've never driven an ATV, but I understand that you've got to really shift your weight sometimes with respect to being able to turn one of these things. They're not light vehicles. I think they're very heavy ones, but it takes some skill to ride this. Anyway, the boyfriend really didn't give his girlfriend any instructions on how to ride, where to ride. He had come across the field. There was a nearby roadway, and the girlfriend drove the ATV on the roadway rather than across the field, which was flat. The roadway actually had a steep incline and a very, very sharp S-curve. And as the girlfriend rode the ATV up the hill had to turn on the S-curve, she wasn't able to do so because she had not been given proper instructions on how to properly make that kind of a turn at a higher rate of speed rather than a slow rate of speed, and crashed into a tree. She was not wearing a helmet. Suffered a very serious brain injury because of that. And so the family and the young woman, as you can imagine, with a serious brain injury, required a lot of medical care and support. And so they sued both the boyfriend and the mother and the father for negligence with respect to the use of this all-terrain vehicle. And at the trial level, while the boyfriend was found to have owed his girlfriend a duty of care with respect to making sure that she had been properly instructed on how to use the ATV, both the mother and father were found not liable. And so there was an appeal to the Ontario Court of Appeal. With respect to liability, the boyfriend actually brought an appeal, and then the family of the young woman and the young woman herself brought what is called a cross appeal on the issue of liability of the parents. And the court, at the end of the day, upheld the decision of the trial judge with respect to the boyfriend's liability, and then reversed the decision of the trial judge with respect to the liability of the father, who was the owner of the all-terrain vehicle, and held that he also was liable for the failure to have provided this young woman with proper instructions, basically the negligence of the of his son, the young woman's boyfriend, was attributed by legislation to the father. So yeah, that in a nutshell... it's a long explanation, sorry, and I hope nobody got bored with that, but that's the background of this case.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we get into when we think of negligence in the operation of a motor vehicle, which is the term right out of the Highway Traffic Act here in Ontario, the statutory term, what does that mean? We think like, oh, you're a bad driver, or you've done something negligently when operating the vehicle. But the court went on to say that it was more than that. The operation of a motor vehicle included who you let operate the motor vehicle, that you've got a duty of care, and that using the language of negligence, to ensure that people who operate your motor vehicle, and in this particular instance, the ATV in question was considered to be a motor vehicle, you know, whether those people are appropriately qualified to do so. And that obligation extends to persons who you give the care and control of that vehicle to. So if you hand the keys over to somebody, you're then responsible for everyone that person allows to operate the vehicle as well. As the owner of the vehicle, you've got an obligation to ensure that the people who operate it are capable of doing so and qualified to do so. And if they're not, you've got exposure to liability. And that ultimately, I think, was the key takeaway of the case here, was that the father who owned the vehicle probably had no idea that the girlfriend was operating it. Didn't really matter because he had an obligation to know.
Yeah, it's it goes beyond that. Not only did he have an obligation to know, but the obligation was to basically ensure that whoever used that ATV had been properly trained to do so, and essentially to say to his son, "Look, please don't allow this ATV to be used by anybody else unless the person is properly trained and instructed." But you know, look, I mean, most children, it's very hard to get them to do anything in terms of following instructions. So, you know, you do have to take responsibility yourself sometimes in terms of making sure that, you know, it's the young woman's, your son's girlfriend, that the likelihood of her operating the vehicle may be high, that you should take some responsibility. The reason that, that I like this case, Gavin, it's almost like, you know, we talked about in one of our other episodes about escaping golf balls and responsibilities of users of golf courses and, you know, the golf club and the owners of golf courses to make sure that the course is designed in such a way that golf balls don't escape the playing field. But recreational vehicles, when I think about it, in Ontario, we have a very significant cottage industry in our province. And it's not uncommon in the summer months to be inviting your friends up to your cottage and to use your toys, right? Whether it's a jet ski or an ATV, or in the wintertime, a snowmobile. And, you know, your children, you know, as they get older, they're riding around on these recreational vehicles or watercraft, would be the legal term for a jet ski. And, you know, young people, their friends want to ride them. And, you know, because it's fun and it's exciting. But these are very, very, just like a car, they can be a very dangerous a form of transport, and people do need to have proper training, and you can't just jump on one of these things and all of a sudden, hey, you're the best skilled jet ski person or ATV driver.
Yeah, I'm going to suggest to you that they're probably more dangerous. I mean, I know with, skidoos and snowmobiles, the speed that they can get to at this point, I mean, they're not your grandpa's snowmobile anymore. I mean, these are things that can get up to like, you know, 100K an hour without much difficulty from whipping across an open field. Bearing in mind, of course, that, any collision at that speed, particularly over unregulated terrain where there could be, I don't know, rocks or something beneath the snow that you can't see. I mean, I know this tragic instances of I've heard of this particularly where there are for example pressure bumps on lakes where ice will form and then the ice will push itself up and have a ridge in the ice, and snowmobilers whipping across an open frozen lake, you know, it looks fantastic, you're flying through it, but beneath it there's a wall of ice, and they literally are driving snowmobiles into this wall of ice. And if you're going fast enough, you can only imagine the catastrophic impact that would occur. You're going 100 kilometers an hour. There's no airbags in snowmobiles. There's really nothing to stop you. And ice is hard. And if you hit it, it can be serious injury. And certainly in Ontario and across Canada, there are tons of snowmobile injuries that happen every year. As one example, I mean, ATVs are the same type of thing. So I think that there is in fact an elevated risk with respect to these types of vehicles. There is no actual technical, I don't know if there is a technical, is there a requirement? Let me ask you this question. Maybe you know the answer. Is there a requirement to have insurance, liability insurance on these kind of vehicles, or is it completely optional?
Gavin, I don't know the answer off the top of my head. I haven't really dug into that specifically, but my sense is that there is no mandatory requirement for insurance, certainly not in Ontario, for any of these kinds of recreational kinds of vehicles. Look, I could be wrong in that regard, looking at one of these kinds of recreational vehicles, jet skis in particular, insurance can vary with respect to jet skis. So there's no real consistency like you would have in a motor vehicle kind of insurance policy, that basically a jet ski can be insured depending on its, I think, horsepower of its motor, et cetera. And so those are, there are certain qualifications in certain insurance policies in regard to that particular kind of a recreational form of transportation. But so I'm not really aware. I don't think that there is. And this case is that, to me, it's the precautionary kind of case, precautionary tale, so to speak, that owners of any of these kinds of things, ATVs, snowmobiles, Sea-Doos, Ski-Doos, jet skis, really, when they're buying one of these things, should contact an insurance broker and get them insured. And they should insure them for a significant amount of money, just as you would a car, because injuries can be catastrophic. And from a public policy perspective here, this case really, we're going to repeat ourselves with respect to a number of our podcasts when we talk about the law and legislation. Legislation is always a matter of statutory interpretation, and there are rules and principles that govern statutory interpretation. All statutes are entitled to be read liberally and broadly. That from a public policy perspective, in terms of the Highway Traffic Act that governed the responsibility of an owner for their vehicle, and an ATV follows within the definition of a motor vehicle under that act, from a public policy perspective, it made a lot of sense for this young woman and her family to be able to make a claim through the father's insurance policy because there was the owner with the asset and had the insurance to basically cover her loss. So that makes a lot of public sense. It's a good public policy to make sure that someone who gets injured using one of these things isn't left to basically the social welfare state to take care of them at the end of the day.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. I mean, that's really the key reason why automobile insurance is mandatory. It's because if you're injured in an automobile accident and you need a remedy, you need that remedy. I mean, this particular plaintiff, this could be little doubt, would have been extremely sympathetic to the court. This is someone who, was a young person, suffered a severe brain injury, was probably suffer from a disability for the rest of her life. I don't know what I hadn't read the specific details of what her injury is, but brain injuries are such that, this is someone who probably couldn't work, who would need constant future care. And a court looking at that will be very anxious to find that person a remedy. And that is ultimately why You want to be in a situation where there is an insurance policy to respond to that type of a situation, because the court will be looking for that remedy. And let me just turn that around for a minute, just in terms of getting people's heads in the right space in terms of, well, why should I pay for the insurance? You know, if you went to rent an ATV or a Sea-Doo, for example, if you go away on a holiday and you're going to rent a Sea-Doo for the afternoon, think about the form you've got to sign before they'll rent the thing to you. What they say is you're responsible for this risk. They identify all of the risks that go into that particular use of that vehicle. Why? Why do they do that? Because it's exactly why they do it. They want to try to exclude themselves from these types of risks. And the reason is because those risks are real. Those insurance is ultimately about risk. If there's no risk, then there's no need for insurance. And there are substantial risks with respect to this. And I mean, this could be, if we're looking at this, I mean, we're talking about potentially damages that could be in the many millions of dollars in terms of quantifying what the cost will be to look after this person for the next for the rest of their life. And as a young person, that's a long time. You know, this is potentially financially ruinous to someone who does not have insurance, because that would be a personal judgment against that person on which would affect all their assets. So they could lose their home, they could lose their livelihood. So these are really serious repercussions, and a little bit of forethought and a little bit of money spent up front goes a long way in terms of avoiding that. And hopefully you never have, and the best insurance, of course, is the insurance you never have to call on.
Well, and that's why I think, look, as an owner, and of any of these kinds of, devices, vehicles, watercraft, you really, do need to take, some responsibility here, with respect to the use of your property. You know, in the commercial sense, you're absolutely right. The commercial business who's renting you one of these things is going to have you sign a form, and they'll take you through it. It's like when you actually rent a car. You basically have to initial whether you're taking insurance for that and to pay for the insurance. Now, my policy covers me internationally when I travel for that. So, you know, I'm getting over insurance if I do that. But you really do need to be prudent. And, you know, I hate to sound like a fuddy-duddy, if that's a term that Google it, and then you'll know what that is. But people have to be responsible, both as owners and as users. You know, I'd love to ride an ATV, but I got to tell you, if I'm going to do that, I certainly want to have some form of instruction. Or, you know, if I go to a sunny destination where they're surfing, I'm not just going to grab a surfboard and, you know, go out on the ocean somewhere and not know what the local issues are, or without any kind of proper instruction on how to use a surfboard. So people do need to be prudent. Now, in this case, Gavin, the one thing that we don't know is actually what were those damages? What was she entitled to in terms of money? What was the family entitled to? Under Ontario, we have a Family Law Act where family members can be compensated for loss of care, guidance, and companionship, because this case only dealt with the liability issue. But, you know, at the end of the day, one can imagine that the damages here are going to be fairly significant. I'm not sure what the owner's insurance policy was and how much it covered, but you're potentially looking at the loss of the family farm if the insurance policy doesn't cover those damages awards that she'd be entitled to.
Yeah, a cautionary tale indeed, a tragic one. But you know, these vehicles are fun for a reason. They are thrilling. They are exciting. And one of the things is reasons why is frankly because they're dangerous. Fuddy-duddy or not, you have to recognize the fact that the reason for the attraction is the risk that's involved in it. And with risk, things can go terribly, terribly wrong, as they did here, and it can happen in an instant. And these are extraordinarily powerful vehicles, that have the ability, as you mentioned, they're not particularly protected, but they can cause very serious harm. So,
yeah, and just one thing before we wrap up here, the listener is going to say, well, Stephen, you said that she wasn't wearing a helmet, so a lot of that fault should be placed on her. And indeed, some fault was placed on her, but it was only 10%.
Yeah, I mean, and then raises the issue of, did she have a helmet to put on in the first place? I mean, is that part of the owner's responsibility to ensure that the proper protective equipment is provided for every individual who may be either operating or riding upon that vehicle? It doesn't take much to see that if there's a responsibility to ensure that the people operating the vehicle are appropriately trained, that there would be further responsibility to ensure that they have the appropriate equipment to be able to safely operate the vehicle. Anyways, it all of that is to say that with ownership of any item that can cause others harms entails a responsibility on the part of an owner. And with ownership, that responsibility has to be fulfilled. And when things go wrong, as they do, you should be prepared for that. So a little forethought in terms of insurance, and be careful about who you let drive your ATV. Let's be straight about it. So with that, I think we'll wrap up this episode. First of all, thanks to you for listening. Really appreciate it. Comments, please rate us if you can. Really appreciate any ratings or feedback. It makes us better. We are still getting the hang of this podcasting thing, although we've got quite a few episodes out there right now. At least
we should be thanking. We have a whole pile of new followers, is my understanding. And, the one thing I do want to say quickly before we wrap up, what we are trying to do here with this podcast is be educational a little bit in terms of the law. We're not promoting our own cases. We're actually promoting what the law is all about. And, I was talking to John, one of our colleagues yesterday, and he loves our podcast for that very reason.
Yeah, I think the law, it's often one of those things, having a commentary on what the law is. The law is a reflection of societal issues that are important, and the courts in governing the way we operate as a society. And the courts provide a vital, vital function in that regard, as does the legislature, of course. So what we try to do is get underneath it, take a look at these cases, sort of beyond the taglines or the buzzwords in media, to get at what's really going on here. And for the most part, I think the courts exhibit an enormous amount of common sense. And when you know a little bit of context and facts, those cases make a lot of sense. And we're definitely indebted to the judiciary, who spend so much time and energy to come to these reasoned decisions, as they did in this particular case, that frankly do the right thing for the most part. And this is one of those cases. Unfortunately, the right thing can sometimes be a very, very heavy burden to bear if you're not prepared for it. So with that, Stephen, I think we can wrap up this episode. Thanks again for listening. Kudos out to our producer, Doug Downs. Thanks for all your hard work as always. And always remember, if nobody is above the law,